Welcome back to Copper Country Today. And during this segment, we're going to be talking about issues dealing with the Houghton County Memorial Airport. It's a busy time at the airport as a lot of people are flying in and out for all the holidays. So I thought it'd be a good time to welcome in the manager of the airport, Dennis Hex, to the program. Welcome to Copper Country Today.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you for having me today.
So how are things going on right now over the airport? I just imagine with so many people getting ready to travel, they're either going home for the holidays or coming home for the holidays. This has got to be one of the busier times of the year.
It is. It'll ramp up here in another maybe week or so. The flights will be full. Everybody's going home or coming in, and it is a very busy time of the year for us. Usually the weather is a challenge this time of year, but we've been fortunate so far. I know for most of the businesses around here, snow is a blessing because it keeps things going economically. But for the airport, every day that we don't have snow up there is a bonus for us when it comes to the budget and getting flights in and out. So I hope we do get snow, but I just hope we don't get pounded like we usually do this time of year so we can keep things moving.
Well, having visited the airport, the time we drove around in your truck, and I imagine how much of an effort it would have to be to keep the runways cleared. And you told me that, during the wintertime that they plow all day, every day.
Yeah, normally we have, minimum of one person on shift, depending on what kind of snow you have up there. And they literally do plow 20 hours a day. And when it stops snowing, then they've got to clean behind the lights. They've got to clear it out for the next storm and move the snow where it belongs so that we have room for everybody and flights keep going. So it's a full-time job, two shifts, 10-hour shifts they work. 20 hours a day, all the way from, whenever it starts snowing. Usually by now we'd be plowing 20 hours a day all the way into the end of February and into March.
Now, do you have to keep runways clear even if you don't have any scheduled flights coming in that day or taking off just in case somebody has to land?
Yeah, because what people have to understand, a lot of people think that the airport is only there for, they assume that the airport's there for just those two flights a day from SkyWest to United, and there's not really much else that goes on up there. That couldn't be further from the truth. We have two cargo operators that come in every day, and they haul almost 800,000 pounds of freight out a year out of the airport, in and out of the airport. And then we have corporate travelers that come in. We have charters that come in. We have general aviation. So, yes, we have to keep the runway clean and as best as we can from 4 in the morning till midnight every day, 365 days a year. So it is a big job. And fortunately, I have a good crew up there that does a great job.
Overall, are you starting to see more people take advantage of the fact that we have an airport here?
Yeah. I mean, it's stayed pretty steady from the time I've been here. I've only been here 13 years. But if you look at the history of the emplacements and the boardings and stuff, it's been anywhere between 50 and 55,000 people a year that fly out on SkyWest. A couple more thousand that fly in and out on charters and corporate travel, things like that. We've got at least, on average, between 27 and 30 general aviation aircraft up there. That fluctuates a little bit, and they do a lot of flying in and out. So it has actually grown a little bit, but it has its peaks and valleys like everything else. And, the airport is kind of like the Copper Country where, I was told when I moved here, the economy never really spikes really high or really dips really low. It just kind of stays steady. And the airport is the same way when it comes to the numbers.
Are you dependent on the number of people taking flights in order to keep the airport open? Is any sort of dependency on that at all?
Definitely. It's very important to keep the numbers. We do about 25,000 employments a year. I'd like to see it go higher. At one time, it was actually 27,000 boardings a year. Total passengers are between 50 and 55,000 a year. And that's what drives everything up there. So if air service were to go away or if we had the boardings go way down, that would be detrimental to the airport. Right now, we get grant money every year of $1 million a year for capital improvements. But the only way you can get that is if you have 10,000 employments or more a year. Other airports within the region have suffered where they've lost air service for a little while, and then they've gone down below the 10,000 employments. So you don't get $1 million to do your capital improvements, fix the runway, the aprons, things like that. So that's why it's critical to keep it going. And there's also, businesses up there that depend on the passenger count and the people that come in and go out of the airport.
What does it mean to be an essential air service provider?
EAS Airport is very important. Well, Essential Air Service, or EAS, is very important to us right now. Basically, what they're saying is because of fuel prices and operating costs and things like that for the airline, they can't make a profit if they were to come in here and not be subsidized. Now, people have to understand, too, when they get subsidized, it doesn't mean that they're getting paid 100% for the flight. For example, SkyWest, when they bid on our airport, they bid on a 69% load factor. So if it's 69% or below, then that subsidy would make up for it. If it's 69% or higher, then they would make whatever profit they have. So it's not, and they have to come in every day unless it's weather. If they cancel for that, they still do get paid because there is some cost to them. So it is critical because we're right on the borderline of having enough people fly in and out of the airport where the airline wouldn't need subsidy. Our per passenger subsidy is much lower than any of the EAS airports that are in the system. We range anywhere between $19 per passenger up to about $35. When you consider some EAS airports across the country are in the $200 range per passenger, we're in a very good position.
Now, over the recently, anyways, or prior to this year, there were some struggles that were going on. The airport was faced with a number of issues. Some of them were with the airport. Some of them had nothing to do with the airport, but still affected service. How are the situations right now?
Yeah, last year was a very challenging year. Between the weather, which everybody had to deal with, it compounds itself up there at the airport. We have problems with our automated surface observation system, or our weather machine. Chicago had problems where a guy's tried to light himself on fire down in the ATC center, which shut him down for 2 weeks. There were crew issues, things like that. This year has been much better. Chicago has been running a lot better. They did a thing called rebanking down there, which essentially increases the on-time performance. We were able to get certified as weather observers up at the airport. So now if the weather machine does go down, we've got backup weather observers so that there won't be massive cancellations or delays or anything like that because of the weather. And of course, again, the weather has been kind to us this year so far. So it's a much better year than last year.
Now, the weather service, the people that can actually go out and physically monitor the weather if your machine goes down, that was really important because you had guys that could do it, but if the machine went down, they weren't allowed to.
Yeah, because the FAA took over the program from the National Weather Service to certify the backup weather observers. Unfortunately, we got caught in the middle where they were just transferring it over to the FAA. So the FAA was trying to write their policy and procedures for it. At the same time, I'm on their door knocking on the door saying, hey, we need to get certified because, you know, I'm losing flights and it's disrupting traffic up here. And it took me almost over 18 months to get that certification. And I probably wouldn't have been able to do it without the help of our congressmen and senators and Michigan Tech, because they put political pressure on the FAA to help us out and get us certified. And we finally were able to do that last September.
How many people do you have certified now?
Right now we have 4 people certified. Becoming a weather observer, you would think it's pretty easy. You just look outside and say, hey, it's foggy, it's raining, you know, the cloud is this high. But it's a lot more complicated than that. When we took the training for that, on average, you get a 30% pass rate. I had 10 people in the class, 5 people from the airport, 5 people from SkyWest, and 4 of us passed, so 40%. So we beat the average, but still it's only a weak class. It's very difficult, and we were fortunate to have that many pass.
Yeah, it's still 60% fail rate. I mean, that's a tough class.
It's very tough when you think that really the average is a 70% fail rate. But I like to look at the glass half full. So, you know, it's 40% is better than 30%, right? So what I'd like to do, though, because in the end, what I really want to happen is have all the airport employees up there as weather observers. We can't do the training in winter because usually we're really busy. But in the spring, I plan to hold another class to get more people certified.
Now, you mentioned Chicago a couple of times. People may not know just how essential Chicago is to our air service. Don't most of our flights go to Chicago and then you can go anywhere from there?
Yeah, and that's really critical, especially with the businesses that we have in our community and the R&D and, you know, tech being a worldwide research college and everything like that, that it's important that you have those connections. Going into Chicago, it is a large hub, but it has connections worldwide. You know, it'd be nice to go to Detroit or Minneapolis too, because the connections there are still the same, and the weather's a little better, but they don't have as much. So Chicago does offer more opportunities. It does offer more opportunities for cheaper fares also. You know, if you fly on SkyWest United down to Chicago, and you could get on Southwest, you could get on other low-cost carriers or shop around a little bit and fly out of a different carrier out of Chicago too. So it provides us a lot of opportunities, and it is critical to have that kind of connection.
So if you're using the airport this year, perhaps you've got family coming in from out of town, there's a good chance they're flying through Chicago to get up here, and they're going to want to be aware of a few things this time of year while traveling. How are wait times and getting there early, especially with some of the problems we've had with unfortunate events throughout the world?
It's very critical. You know, you really want to be there 90 minutes before departure time. I have a lot of people that call me and say, okay, it's Houghton. When do I really need to be there? It's like, well, you still need to be there 90 minutes before. The problem is because, especially this time of year, the flights will fill up. And if they have 50 people standing in line, and you're there 35 minutes before departure, but you don't get to the gate in time, or you're backed up in line, you may not get on the flight. What happens is the computer actually locks out the gate agents sometimes because they want an on-time departure. Plus, those gate agents here, especially here at Houghton or any small airport, they might have to go out and service the plane. So you want to make sure you're there on time, especially if you're flying international. That takes a lot longer to go through documentation and things like that. It takes longer because, you know, people this time of year, they have more stuff in their bags and things like that. So it takes longer for TSA to go through the bags. So you definitely want to be there at least 90 minutes before departure. And if you can't do that, the gate will close 30 minutes before departure. And if you didn't have any bags to put on and all you had was a carry-on, then you could actually be there 15 minutes before departure to go through security. But you're really pushing it at that point because you would need your ticket and all your documentation in your hand in order to do that.
You know, the days from running from the cab and running up, onto the ramp there, trying to catch your plane just before it takes off, those are long gone.
Oh, they're long gone. And I tell you what, I saw a picture one time that actually it was Melvin Anderson. He had taken a picture, and it had an airplane, an old DC, I think DC-3 or whatever, but the flight attendant was standing at the top of the steps of the airplane, and people are driving their cars right up to the airplane, and this is a real picture. It wasn't made up. And they were getting on the plane and saying goodbye right there. There was no gate agent or anything like that. And I was told back in the day, too, that then people would park the cars along the runway and wave as the plane took off and stuff like that. So, yeah, we're far away from that because of the world we live in today. It is necessary to be there on time. All the security things that we have go on, checking and all that, it's just necessary to be that way.
And you have to be mindful of what you pack these days. Of course, you're going to get checked when you go through security there. What are some things to be aware of?
Well, some of the things, especially when you're putting stuff in your bags, if you wrap up presents, TSA will have to unwrap them to see what they are. So you don't want to wrap up presents and leave them in your bag. What you want to do is take the wrapping paper, put it in the bag separately, put your presents and stuff in there unwrapped, and then wrap them when you get to your destination. Otherwise, they're going to have to open them up. You want to make sure that if there's any liquids or anything like that, they're not more than 3.4 ounces. That's critical, too. Otherwise, they'll have to confiscate those. And some of those things, like a snow globe, for example, is more than 3.4 ounces. So TSA would have to confiscate that. Maple syrup that you might buy as a gift or something, that might be more than 3.4 ounces. So you definitely want to make sure that you have everything out and open so that they can see it and don't wrap things up. And you can go to the tsa.gov /travel website to find out what items are prohibited.
Are they prohibited in both your luggage and your carry-ons, or only on your carry-ons?
Some of it's carry-ons, and some of it and other stuff is not prohibited in your luggage. But what happens is if you put it in your luggage wrapped, then they will have to unwrap it and take a look at it to see what it is, because they want to, based on what's happening in the world, I want them to open up my luggage, take a look what I got in there, make sure that they're doing their job right. And they do a good job up at the airport.
Yeah, sure. Leave no stone unturned.
Yes.
What are some other things maybe you might want to be aware of flying out, especially during your busiest time of the year?
Just basically what we've gone over here as far as making sure that, you know, you're there 90 minutes before, you don't have things wrapped. Have an alternate plan in case something goes wrong. You know, give yourself enough time. Don't have a connection in Chicago that's only an hour or two, maybe even an hour and a half. Try to make the connection a little longer. And that goes for any airport that you fly out of. I mean, we're not just talking about Houghton here. If you do fly out of some of the other regional airports, you know, Marquette, Escanaba, Iron Mountain, Ironwood, you should always give yourself enough time, and you should always have a plan B just in case something goes wrong.
So what are some other things that you have coming up this year for 2016?
This year, what we've got coming up for is our big project anyways that we use for our grant money for the capital improvement. We're going to be redoing the whole ramp in front of the apron. The pavement out there is actually from 1972, so it's outlived its useful life, and it's done a really good job. So we're going to be tearing that up, and we're going to be redoing that. It will not affect air service at all, other than, you know, it's just going to be a little bit messy out there. But we're going to do half of the ramp in the probably starting in June, and then we'll do the other half once we finish the first half, and then that way everybody can come and go, and there should be no disruptions. But other than that, you know, as far as capital improvement projects, that's the big one that we've got going on. And this summer, also in August, the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, is going to be having another fly-in, or Young Eagles, they call it. And last year we had that, and they had almost 300 people up there. So it's pretty incredible that many people show up, and these guys fly everybody for a 15-minute flight, and it's on their own dime. Their own aircraft, and they're trying to promote aviation and get younger people involved and excited about it so that hopefully someday they will be a pilot or be in aviation.
I've flown out in and out of Houghton County once, but I've been there so many times that it's very rarely ever to fly out. And whether it's you know, the youth, was a summer youth program, mm-hmm. with the young people that flying, I got to fly up in a plane. Glad to get down after that. That was really something. It was the smallest plane I'd ever been in, so it was a kind of exciting. And then of course you know with the drills, the disaster drills that are held up there. You just had one this past summer. I know it goes on a schedule where it gets shipped around a little bit. Why is it important to the airport to be involved in that? I know it's good for the emergency response teams.
Well, and what people don't know is I've got six maintenance employees up there. We call them. That are also firemen. They're fuelers. They mow the lawn. They plow the snow. They fix the equipment. They fix the buildings. So they're multifaceted in a lot of different things. But being a firefighter is one of the most important things that we have up there that they can do. And the FAA requires that we have a mass casualty drill every 3 years. So we have seven different volunteer fire departments that participate in that. The two hospitals, ambulance. I can't think off the top of my head. There's a lot more that's involved, but it is a big deal. And every year, every time we've done it, the drill's gotten better and better. It's gotten smooth. So I think we're very well prepared if we were have a mass casualty that would happen up at the airport. And every year we do actually practice with the fire departments one-on-one so that they know what's going on too, because you know, coming into an airport, once you get inside that fence, if you're not used to an airport, it can be kind of foreign to you. So we bring the volunteer firemen up there, the police, the ambulance drivers, and we drive them around and show them what we have up there so they know where to go and what runways not to cross and what to look for and things like that. So I feel real good about it.
Yeah, there's no way to underestimate the size of the place. I mean, when you just look out from the terminal there, and you can see pretty clear since it's all flat and it's all straight and it doesn't look that big. But once you start going from one point there to, you know, a runway down the way, it takes a while just to even drive out there. It's so huge.
Yeah. Well, our longest runway is 6,500 feet long. Our secondary is 5,400 feet long, just to give you kind of a general idea. And then we have over 2,400 acres that the airport owns up there. About 700 acres of that is inside the fence. The fence is 7.5 miles long, goes all the way around the perimeter of the airport there. And you need a lot of land for an airport, because even though that's what we own, the approaches to the airport make it even go out further, because we have to make sure that there's no obstacles that are too tall out there for planes coming and going. Excuse me. So an airport is massive in size, and ours is just a little airport. If you had Chicago or places like that, it really sprawls out quite a bit, not just on the ground, but above the ground.
Are there laws against, like, flying drones and stuff over an airport?
You know, that's something that's new and the FAA is trying to get a handle on right now. They do have, I wouldn't call them laws, but just guidelines at this point. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is important, because more and more people are buying drones. More and more people are using drones for research, for news reports. I've seen them for work type things like that. And right now, if they're within 5 miles of the airport, they're required by the guidelines or laws that the FAA is coming out to notify the airport manager. Now, I'm a big proponent of drones. I love them. I think it's a great thing, and you know, the possibilities are endless as to what they're going to be able to do for us in the future, good and bad. So if someone calls me and says they want to fly their drone within that 5 mile radius, I'm not going to turn them down right away and say no. The reason I want them to talk to me is so that I know, are you flying on our approach? If you are flying on our approach, then we need to keep you at a different height, or maybe you shouldn't be flying there. Maybe you can fly over here and things like that. So just because you have to call an airport manager of any airport does not mean that they're going to turn you down. It's more of, we need to communicate with each other so we don't have any safety issues or any mishaps that would happen for the drones.
We have a number of private flyers here in the Copper Country who just enjoy recreational flying. During the wintertime, are they still able to practice that sport?
Yeah, but it's kind of limited because of our snow again. And they can fly any time in the winter, especially if there's blue skies out there. If we've got clouds, it's a little different because they still can fly, but they don't want to get into the clouds as much, because then you have the possibility of icing. And planes and ice doesn't mix very well. You know, it can end badly sometimes. So if your plane's not equipped to fly in the icing, or if you're really not an instrument-rated pilot during the winter months when we have a lot of snow and clouds and things, it kind of restricts the VFR pilots, or the visual flight rule pilots, from flying. But when we have those sunny days, that's when everybody comes out to fly and have a good time.
For new pilots that are, you know, they just got their license or they're just getting their first plane, do they go through the airport in order to because I assume the plane stays there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, we right now we have T hangars for them to put their plane in. Fortunately for us, and unfortunately, the T hangars are all full. So it restricts people from going out and buying a plane. Because if I were going to buy a plane, I would want a hangar to put in, and especially up here. So we're working to see if there's a possibility of maybe building some more hangars in the spring. The only problem is you have to come up with the funding, which is always the problem, right? So we're looking into that to see if we can afford it, see if there's enough interest to do that. But that's where we have, like I said, over 30 planes up there that are just general aviation that are stored in all the hangars.
And lastly, about this will also apply, I guess, to a lot of people traveling and certainly holiday travel. We lost a little bit of taxi service here in the area. I know that there's a taxi service that runs for, you know, airport traffic. What's the situation there?
We have we did lose Neil's. Was what I heard. I haven't really looked into it that much, but we do have Copper Country Limo. And we do have a taxi cab service out of Barraga. And we've got another one out of actually Marquette that is positioned taxis up here in the area, is what I've heard. And I've actually seen them up at the airport. So if people were looking for a taxi or they wanted a phone number, they could call the airport at 482-3970. We can help them out with that.
Dennis, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a great talk.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.